All right. So glad to be here this morning. Chris Grota is in Alabama doing some coursework at Heritage Christian. In studio with me today is our beloved Ryan Smithy. How are you doing, Ryan?
Morning. Doing just great.
All right. Excited to be here this morning. I know we've got a lot of good stuff that we're going to talk about. We've also got a bunch of announcements. So we have the announcement page. Got a lot of stuff here. It's trying. Don't want to spill your tea.
Flared up for the fall.
Yeah,
or spring.
We're spring. Everything we got it. We got it rolling. So let's. Oh, cool. They got the stuff out for the Memphis Lectures. They get to hear about that today. I haven't heard anything about that yet. So, all right.
This is one coming up in Nesbitt, Mississippi, February 27th through the 29th. That's a Friday through Sunday. They're hosting their annual Standing in the Gap Lectures, 18th annual. This year they're looking at the theme, How Did We Get the Bible? And this will be the first year Tolstar is traveling up and recording that. And so looking forward to that. Nesbitt, Mississippi, just south of South Haven, Memphis area.
Oh, okay.
So, anybody in that area can get over to it. I know that you would be greatly benefited by it.
Yeah, talk to some of them GBM boys over there. Get them Teske men down there. February 3rd and 4th is the fourth annual Make Me a Servant workshop. And that'll be at the Mount Vernon Church of Christ in Mount Vernon, Texas. If you'd like for more information, the website is mountvernonchurchofchrist.org. When it comes to speakers, they have Michael Light coming in, Clay Bond, Richard Rutledge, Sean Embry, and John McCormack, and there are also ladies that are speaking. The flyer has Holy McCormack, and
it's been updated.
So this is the one we got.
Holly's coming in.
Holly is holy. She is set apart. She's different, so that is good. But Holly, I'm sure Holly will do fine. Carly Bond, as well as Marley Embry, are all going to be speaking. This is a big deal that the Mount Vernon Church of Christ puts together. I have a feeling it'll be streamed.
Yes, sir. It will.
So we'll have the opportunity, if you're in the area, I'm sure that will be worth making. That is February 3rd and February 4th.
All right. Then February 11th for the ladies at the Carriage Oaks Church of Christ. There will be a Bible class workshop that's hosted by T. McCorder and April Meacham. I've always heard good things about the workshops that they do. And they've been offered in this area, but you may want to go back and brush up on some things. So that's going to be February 11th from 9 in the morning, 3 in the afternoon. And that's at the Carriage Oaks Church of Christ.
Yep, they brought their bookstore, the Chula Vista, they brought that bookstore to the Brown Trail Lectures a couple weeks ago. And that is impressive. Because most of the time you tell somebody, hey, we want you to bring your bookstore, it's like four tables worth of books. So you don't really think all that much of it. And when Mark asked them if they wanted to bring their bookstore, they brought a bookstore. I mean, all types of not only literature but class material and all types of stuff. It was Lisa asked me, she said, how did you spend over $50 at that bookstore? Well, good stuff there.
Stacks up easy.
March the 12th to the 19th at the Bryan College Station Church of Christ, the BCS Church of Christ, is going to be a young men development conference called Quit You Like Men from 1 Corinthians 16, 13. I know that Brother Rick Popejoy is one of those that's heading this up. He's got a lot of really good fellows that are coming in. It is a week-long event, as we said, March 12th to the 19th. They're shooting for the ages of 19 to 27, but if you're a little bit younger or older, they're not going to say no. So to the best of my knowledge, what I've gathered is there's not an expense to it. If you want to go, they'll help you make it work. So that is March 12th to the 19th, the Young Men Development Conference in College Station, Texas.
As I have heard Rick said, if you'll get here, I'll take care of you.
Exactly.
You cover your transportation, and there won't be any cost for no doubt a challenging week in the sense that you will be built up and encouraged to be your best. And then finally, this morning we have a flyer here on the 51st Annual Memphis School of Preaching Lectureship, March 26th through the 30th, looking this year at Build Your Hope on Things Eternal. And that runs Sunday through Thursday with a full lineup there of lessons going on each day.
See if any of our buddies are in there. Yeah. I'm not seeing Ryan Smithy in
here. No.
Ryan Smithy should be in here.
They get the good speakers for that.
Oh, boo. Boo. I do see some guys I like. I've never had the chance to hear Brian Gieselbach.
Mm-hmm.
I'm friends with his son, Ben. Ben is a fantastic rider. So I'd like to hear Brian. They got Howard Odom. He and I graduated at the same time. We met at the Spiritual Sword. So that's cool to see Howard on there. We might have to give him a call one time and plug the lectures, get to talk to mm-hmm. him. It's been a while since I caught up with him. A lot of good folks on this. This is going to be a good deal. Are you going to be streaming this?
We won't. They do their own stream, so you can be looking forward. I know MSOP.org. You can get audio streams and or video streams.
Oh, wow.
And so you can tune in there. And certainly a busy spring, as always, coming up. And
so are all of the MSOP lectures, are they all Memphis graduates? But then I saw Tom Waycaster,
right.
And he is a Brown Trail graduate.
Right.
So they must do something similar to what we are starting to do with ours, is it's graduates as well as friends of
right,
the school.
Right.
So that's cool. Tom Waycaster is a good rider, mm-hmm. too. So
Definitely.
But a lot of good stuff. If you have any type of announcement that you'd like for us to announce, because apparently I left my thesaurus in the car, if there's something you would like for us to let the Brotherhood know about, please send that over to us. What's your email address that would be best to send
easiest,
that to?
Send it to mornings@tgrn.org, mornings@tgrn.org, or office if you have a hard time with that one.
All right. mornings@tgn.org or office@tgn.org. You got the chat box pulled up. Anybody
we
in
do,
there
we
today?
Do. We're alone so far, but encourage
alone.
You to get into the gospelradionetwork.org. Click listen live, and then you can tune into that chat box. And
cool.
If you've got a comment, a question, anything else, get on there, and we'll try to read those as we go along and make mention as they fit in. So.
I think Chris and I have done this for like 55 weeks now, and we've never utilized it.
Okay.
So I'm not surprised we don't have anybody in here. They might have realized it was a waste of time, but now that I know we can pull it up, we might try to start utilizing
that.
Well, what do we got on the docket? Where do you want to start today?
We're looking this morning at least the first part of
Jacob and Esau,
the twin brothers there. Might go back, at least mention their birth, and kind of look at the first part of their life. And, you know, I was thinking on the way over this morning, their life had a lot of ups and downs. And Jacob certainly did, but yet through it all, God was with him.
Right,
so
right.
Wonderful lessons.
Everybody has their favorites when it comes to the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my least favorites is Jacob.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I understand. I mean, he was faithful and in the end. And I mean, it was, but it's just one of those things that just, he had
right.
hardships, of course, but I'm just not real fond of him.
Mm-hmm.
Not one of my favorite guys to study. I mean, I'll be glad to see him and when we get to heaven, but still just one of those deals. I just didn't like how he did some stuff.
Right. And, you know, you go back there to his whole name, the idea of the supplanter and the one who reminds you of some people today almost seemingly willing to do anything to get ahead
mm-hmm.
and to get his foot in the door. Almost cost him a relationship with indeed most of his family for some 20 years or more there as he would have to run away and hide. Fortunately, a little better there maybe toward the end of his life, but he also is going to set in motion some things that are going to plague that family. When you talk about favoritism and other things, mm-hmm. we see the foundation of it here even from almost birth.
Yeah, even how he treats Leah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing a lesson in the summer series down at Northwest in Fort Worth, and they're wanting to find people that are holy.
Mm-hmm.
And I chose to do a lesson on Leah
mm-hmm.
because in a time of society now where if someone feels like they're unloved, they feel justified and run into the arms of someone else. She was prayerful
mm-hmm.
and she stayed with him and she had six kids. And I thought it was so interesting. I haven't really got to study it yet. Lessons in August. But I think it's so neat that when it comes to the children of Leah, one is Judah.
Mm-hmm.
Who Jesus comes through,
mm-hmm.
and the other is Levi, who Moses comes through.
Yeah.
So I thought that was kind of neat. It's like, you know, she wasn't treated right by and large, but even at the end, she's buried with Jacob.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she, as much as he had not wanted her to start, he ended up with her in the grave.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it is what it is. We, you know, we look at the birth of Esau and Jacob, the children of Isaac, the son of Abraham. So you hear the son of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Isaac prayed to the Lord for his wife because she was barren, and the Lord granted his prayer, and Rebekah conceived, his wife conceived. The children struggled together within her, and she said, "If it is thus, why is this happening to me?" So she went to inquire of the Lord, and the Lord said to her, "Two nations are in your womb, and two people from within you shall be divided. The one shall be stronger than the other. The older shall serve the younger." So we look at verse 25, chapter 25, we're looking at verse 23, and you know, she knew what was going to happen beforehand. It's one of those things, you hear the song, "Mary, Did You Know?"
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, yeah, she knew. The angel told her so. Like, "Mary, did you know?" It's like, yes, she knew. She did know. If you read your Bible, she knew. Kill's a pretty song, mm-hmm. but she knew. But we look at what happened even in their birth. When her days to give birth were completed, behold, the twins were in the womb. The first came out red, all his body like a hairy cloak. So they called his name Esau. And afterward, his brother came out with his hand holding Esau's heel. So his name was called Jacob. Jacob means he takes the heel, or he cheats. So that'll be appropriate. We don't normally do our names like that anymore. So, people just come up with their own names now.
Mm-hmm. And back up there just for a minute, even Esau, the idea of the hairy one there, in some ways not that creative of names, but at the same time representative. And you see those carried out in their lives.
Yeah, you remember The Lion King? You got kids. You watch Lion King? And it's like you see that Simba means something great. I forgot what it was, like king or something like that. So somebody made a tweet once that said, "We'll name this one Simba. It means king. Let's name this one Scar, because look at his face." It's like, and they wondered why he turned out that way. Doesn't make any sense. So we move a little bit further. Genesis, remember, is being recounted through inspiration of the Holy Spirit through the pen of Moses. So we're not going to get some of the intricacies of what happened, and we're going to see a lot of life pass by. And between verse 28 and verse 29, it end up seeing that there's a lot of time that goes by. Verse 29 of chapter 25, "Once when Jacob was cooking stew, Esau came in from the field, and he was exhausted. And Esau said to Jacob, 'Let me eat some of that red stew, for I am exhausted.' Therefore, his name was called Edom." And Edom sounds like the Hebrew word for red. Jacob said, "Sell me your birthright now." And Esau said, "I'm about to die. Of what use is a birthright to me?" Jacob said, "Swear to me now." So he swore to him and sold his birthright to Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau bread and lentil stew, and he ate and drank and rose and went his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright. It was flippant.
Mm-hmm.
There's a show that my wife and I enjoy, The Flash. Have you ever watched it?
I don't believe so.
It's pretty cool. It's one of those. It's funny, but it's one of those superhero shows. And The Flash, at one point, spoilers if you're watching and you haven't made it to season two, but he gives up his speed to save somebody else's life. Well, they try to get his speed back. Well, he goes into this realm that's between Earth and everything, and they told him, "You really didn't appreciate it if you gave it up so readily." He's like, "But it was to save somebody's life." And they were like, "You still didn't appreciate it." And while it may be a stretch, it's on my mind because I watched it last night. But right here we see that Esau didn't really care. He was exhausted. I believe it's a little hyperbole. "I'm about to die." And again, what we see here is Jacob being cunning, and it's another reason I just don't really like Jacob all that much, is a brother came in hurting, and he's like, "Well, give me your birthright, and I'll trade it." It's like, skeezball. I don't like how he did that, but he did it. He ended up being okay. There's a lot of things we did when we were younger that I'm sure that we aren't real proud of, but he was so easily able to get it. It may have been one of those, he said it, kind of goofing. And Esau was like, "Yeah, sure, give it to me. I'm starving to death." And Jacob's like, "Okay, well, swear to me then." Easy cheesy. So he got it. Now, remember, Esau later on, he thinks he's still going to be given the blessing.
Right.
From Isaac. So he gives up the birthright, whatever. He's going to end up getting the blessing, and the blessing may end up being worth more than the birthright. Is that right?
You know, I don't know all those customs there, but certainly, you know, you think back, at least what's going to come about under the law and things is oftentimes that birthright was kind of that double portion that he would be related to in terms of the inheritance, the physical things maybe, but yet that birthright oftentimes as you look, Genesis is going to record a number of those. It's what you're going to become, but what your heritage is as well, where your family's going. In many ways, that was a kind of a treasured thing there as well.
Yeah, and so Esau just didn't really show very good sense here. We move a little bit further. God makes a promise to Isaac. We see in verse 2, the Lord appeared to him and said, "Do not go down to Egypt. Dwell in the land of which I will tell you. Sojourn in this land, and I will be with you, and will bless you. For you, for to you and your offspring I will give all these lands, and I will establish the oath that I swore to Abraham your father. I will multiply your offspring as the stars of heaven, and will give your offspring these lands." So again, we're seeing another example of the Abrahamic promise from Genesis chapter 12. And all of this stuff is going to be kickstarted into happening, and it ends up, I mean, starts with the children of Jacob, and it goes, I mean, the 70 go into Egypt and come out millions. So pretty incredible.
That's one thing I love, I guess, tracing through here more than anything, is looking at how each successive generation, God is passing that promise down, and there's that reminder, I am faithful. I'm not forgetting this. It's not going away. It is going to be fulfilled, and we begin seeing that at least put into action by the end of the book of Genesis as you see that nation growing.
Yeah, God is God that keeps his promises. And, you know, you can see that when it comes to brethren that are a little left-leaning, that will try to open things up or call scriptural matters not a big deal. Like, I'm preaching a sermon on instrumental music on Sunday, and there's some that's like, well, you know, there are bigger things to talk about. Mm-hmm. And it's like, in your opinion, I mean, not in the opinion of God. If it was important to God, then it should be important to us. Mm-hmm. And I was looking through old Facebook messages, and there was a guy that I don't know where he's attended now, but one of the things he had said, because I'd said, you know, I got a verse by verse education at Brown Trail, I said I believe to be a sound preacher because I back everything up with scripture and in its context. And he said, and it, just one of those, it floored me just how egotistical the guy was. He goes, "Well, I believe I have a better sense of what being sound is." Uh-huh. And and some things I just let go. Mm-hmm. And it was like, oh, it was just so full of himself. And we consider that if God's a God that keeps his promises, he's going to be just. And we have to remind people that we have to be right with God. On the day of judgment, God's not going to go, "Well, you know, there were 10 million people that were fooled into thinking the sinner's prayer was okay. Well, since there were 10 million of you, come on in." Mm-hmm. I mean, y'all's numbers outweigh my justice. That's not the way it is. That's right. Why we need to be diligent in teaching the truth in love. Right. So, but we go a little bit further. We see that Isaac is going to bless Jacob in chapter 27. When Isaac was old and his eyes were dim so that he could not see, he called Esau, his older son, and said to him, "My son." And he answered, "Here I am." And he said, "Behold, I'm old. I do not know the day of my death. Now then, take your weapons, your quiver, and your bow, and go to the field and hunt game for me, and prepare for me delicious food such as I love, and bring it to me so that I may eat, that my soul may rest, may bless you before I die." That's a pretty good way to go out.
Mm.
Getting some nice beef or something.
Sad thing is, you think about his life, and here his vision's failing and everything. He says, "I'm about to die." Well, remember, he doesn't die until Jacob comes back. I mean, if I'm doing my math right here in my head, it's about 49 years before he actually is yet to die. But he's making those preparations.
Right.
And he wants to bless his sons before that event happened. And
that's why we write a will. I mean,
right.
It's... I remember, I guess it was in the 80s, my grandmother made up her will and got her funeral preparations all done. And the funeral director at the time was at the funeral home was a member of the church, mm-hmm. at the congregation that she was a member of. He's like, why are we doing this? He said, Elizabeth, we're not going to need this for another 30 years. And needed it about 10 years later. Mm-hmm. Cancer is bad. But it was one of those, she planned ahead. She didn't wait until it was too late. That's why it's imperative. I mean, it's death happens. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are going to be 100,000 people that die today that didn't plan on it.
Right.
That it wasn't in their plans. They weren't just sick. I mean, all types of accidents can happen, health anomalies. And that's why it's good to have your plans in order. So you didn't know you were going to get not only Bible lesson, but life advice through TGRN this morning.
And, we talk a lot about, why do you study the Old Testament? Well, there's so many applications that you make into the New Testament, and it's certainly more than the physical. But, I mean, the obvious there is you're thinking about, even here, passing on to his sons, how much more important it is for us to think about, well, I don't know the day of my death, and I need to be prepared spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
And too many have thought, I've got time to worry about that later in my life, and that later never came.
Mm-hmm. So, a lot of application. That's our schoolmaster. It's our tutor. Mm-hmm. So we're able to learn so much about God and about expectations. And the beauty of the Bible is it airs its own dirty laundry. We're able to see the mistakes mm-hmm. that people made and how they came back to God, or how they were right with God and then ended up missing the mark. So we see a lot of examples. Verse 5, Rebekah was listening when Isaac spoke to his son Esau. So when Esau went to the field to hunt for game and bring it, Rebekah said to her son Jacob, I heard your father speak to your brother Esau. Bring me the game and prepare for me delicious food that I may eat and bless you before the Lord before I die. Now, therefore, my son, obey my voice as I command you. Go to the flock and bring me two good young goats so that I may prepare from them delicious food for your father, such as he loves. And you shall bring it to your father to eat so that he may bless you before he dies. But Jacob said to Rebekah, his mother, behold, my brother Esau is a hairy man. And I, and I'm a smooth man. Perhaps my father will feel me, and I shall seem to be mocking him and bring a curse upon myself and not a blessing. And his mother said to him, let your curse be on me, my son. Only obey my voice and go bring them to me. So we see that that's what he does. And where does it say this? And the skins of the young goat she put on his hands and on the smooth part of his neck. How hairy was Esau?
You think about a goat skin. That man.
That's coarse.
Had some hair on him.
Yeah, he did. I mean, that's a body sweater. I mean, that's got to be hot.
Mm-hmm.
We see hairy and we think, oh, okay, yeah, I got it. And it's a. Somebody that's hairy, but that's that's a disease. I mean,
and I can't help but think there. You know, you talk some about Jacob, but think about his mother there.
Oh yeah.
Even at this point, you know, again, he's not excused. He's an older man, could have made his own decisions. He listens to the voice of his mother and is willing to go through with this deception. One verse I wanted to hit, if I can find it again, but even shortly after the birth there, it was mentioned how Genesis 25:28, Isaac loved Esau because he did eat of his venison, and Rebekah loved Jacob. And again, that's going to be the basis for some of this. Yes, they were already striving within the womb, but their love for their children, their kind of favoritism, if you will, is going to fuel this. And we see that with Rebekah even fueling this and driving Jacob, helping him along in this deception anyway.
Right. And starting in verse 18, we see the deception, the fruits of the deception. So he went into his father and said, my father. And he said, here I am. Who are you, my son? And Jacob said to his father, I'm Esau, your firstborn. I have done as you told me. Now sit up and eat of my game. That your soul may bless me. But Isaac said to his son, how is it that you have found it so quickly, my son? And he answered, because the Lord your God granted me success. See, I never liked that. Mm-hmm. I almost wonder if that's on the verge of blasphemy,
mm-hmm.
is to flat out lie like that. Then Isaac said to Jacob, please come near, that I may feel you, my son, to know that you're really my son Esau or not. So Jacob went near to Isaac, his father, and he felt him and said, the voice is Jacob's voice, but the hands are the hands of Esau. And he did not recognize him because his hands were hairy like his brother Esau. So he blessed him. He said, are you really my son Esau? And he said, I am. Then he said, bring it near to me that I may eat of my son's game and bless you. So he brought it near to him, and he ate, and he brought him wine, and he drank. And then his father Isaac said to him, come near and kiss me, my son. So he came near and kissed him, and Isaac smelled the smell of the garments and blessed him and said, see, the smell of my son is as the smell of a field that the Lord has blessed. May God give you of the dew of heaven and of the fatness of the earth and plenty of grain and wine. Let people serve you and nations bow down to you. Be Lord over your brothers, and may your mother's sons bow down to you. Cursed be everyone who curses you, and blessed be everyone who blesses you. Again, we see another part of the Abrahamic covenant. It might be something that the patriarchs passed down as well as part of the blessing. So as soon as Isaac had finished blessing Jacob, when Jacob had scarcely gone out from the presence of Isaac, his father, Esau, his brother, came in from hunting. Talk about timing.
Mm-hmm.
And he had also prepared delicious food and brought it to his father. And he said to his father, let my father arise and eat of his son's game, that you may bless me. And his father said to him, who are you? And he said, I'm your son, your firstborn Esau. Then Isaac trembled very violently and said, who was it then that hunted game and brought it to me? And I ate it all before you came, and I blessed him. Yes, he shall be blessed. And as soon as Esau heard these words of his father, he cried out with exceedingly great and bitter cry and said to his father, bless me, even me also, O father. But he said, your brother came deceitfully, and he has taken away your blessing. Esau says, is he not rightly named Jacob? The cheater. For he has cheated me these two times. Well, one time. This time. He didn't really cheat him out of the birthright. He kind of gave that up, so he needs to look in the mirror on that one. Then he said, have you not reserved a blessing for me? And Isaac answered and said to Esau, behold, I have made him lord over you, and all his brothers I have given to him for servants, and with grain and wine I have sustained him. What then can I do for you, my son? And Esau said to his father, have you but one blessing, my father? Bless me even also, O father. And Esau lifted up his voice and wept. Then Isaac his father answered and said to him, behold, away from the fatness of the earth shall your dwelling be, and away from the dew of heaven on high. But your sword, by your sword you shall live, and you shall serve your brother. But when you grow restless, you shall break his yoke from your neck. So what does that mean to you?
Well, the one thing I see here is of course, these things are going to unfold. And it is through the lineage here of Jacob that we're going to have the rise of the nation. They are going to be the ones that rule over. You'll find the Edomites later, even under subjection. They, I think, eventually, that history there was going to tell us that they will break off that that bondage. I think Hosea 12:1 is the reference I have there concerning that, even in prophecy. But then also the despair. You think of Esau and everything that ought to be his. The birthright's gone. The blessing's gone. What hope do I have? Mm-hmm. And really, you compare those two. There's no comparison. The one, you're going to be great. The other, well, here's a little hope that I'll hold out that one day your people are going to break off this bondage.
Yeah. When you're tired of being under your brother, you can get out of it. But it's one of those that ended up being a curse.
Mm-hmm.
Because what ended up happening to the Edomites? Well, they were smited off the face of the earth, and they didn't follow God.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no more Edomites. So it's one of those, while he may have thought it was a blessing, it really wasn't a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
for his people.
Right.
So we see, I guess we can continue on, look at verse 41. Want to get the full picture here. Now Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing in which his father blessed him, and Esau said to himself, the days of mourning for my father are approaching, and I will kill my brother Jacob. So even if he got done wrong, he still had a bad attitude.
Mm-hmm.
He still had a bad heart. But the words of Esau, her older son, were told to Rebekah. So she sent and called Jacob, her younger son, and said to him, "Behold, your brother Esau comforts himself about you by planning to kill you. Now, therefore, my son, obey my voice. Arise, flee to Laban, my brother, in Haran, and stay with him a while until your brother's fury turns away, until your brother's anger turns away from you and he forgets what you've done to him. Then I will send and bring you from there. Why should I be bereft of you both in one day?" Then Rebekah said to Isaac, "I loathe my life because of the Hittite women. If Jacob marries one of the Hittite women like these, one of the women in the land, what good will my life to me be?" Mm-hmm. Rebekah, I just don't like her either.
I'd say she had some of that kind of deception there. Of course, there was probably some truth there to look at the displeasure that would come from her sons marrying into the people of that land, into the gods and the idols of that land. But there's a reason here. She's covering herself, trying to protect her son, all of those things. And so she shows a great deal of deception in this chapter as well.
Mm-hmm. Just Jacob got it honest.
Right.
He got it honest.
It's going to cost. Again, work out some of this math, but you know, she says, "I'm going to send you away for a few days. You go find a wife. This is going to die off, and you come back." Well, he's not coming back in a year or 2 years. It's some 20, maybe a few more, but 20 plus years here before he's going to return home.
Mm-hmm.
And, fortunately, things will go better. But nevertheless, there is a consequence here
mm-hmm.
to lost time with family that he's going to endure because of these things.
And yeah, we end up seeing Isaac call Jacob and blessed him and directed him, "You shall not take a wife from the Canaanite women. Arise, go to Paddan Aram, to the house of Bethuel, your mother's father, and take as your wife from there one of the daughters of Laban, your mother's brother. God Almighty bless you and make you fruitful and multiply you, that you may become a company of peoples. May he give the blessing of Abraham to you and to your offspring with you, that you may take possession of the land of your sojournings that God gave to Abraham." Thus Isaac sent Jacob away, and he went to Paddan Aram to Laban, the son of Bethuel, the Aramean. That's, for some reason they can't say that. The brother of Rebekah, Jacob and Esau's mother. So Esau turns around and marries an Ishmaelite. So we end up seeing Ishmael, who was the son of Abraham, because Abraham and Sarah didn't have faith that God was going to keep his promises. And we're going to see that this ends up being a big problem that ends up happening. We try to do things our way to help God. We don't help God.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some people today who will resort to gimmickry to try to get people into the church. Like, let me do God a favor. Let mm-hmm. me help make it more appeasable to people. They're not doing God a favor. God has given us the plan. We want to do God a favor. We live obedient lives.
Right.
We teach the truth. And there was a church in Waco, the Victory something denomination, that 30-minute worship,
mm-hmm.
in and out. And they ended up shutting their doors, but it's ridiculous that people want to put gimmicks up saying you only devote 30 minutes to God a week and you're going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's the complete opposite of the biblical principle.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I hope we live in a society, and I think we're maybe starting to see some of that sees the emptiness of that, and are longing for something that's real. And, you know, it's not going to come from our minds. So if we go back to looking at God and his word, that's where the answer is going to come from. So that's what we need to keep up and keep proclaiming forth in our communities.
Yeah. Verse 8, I'm a little bit confused about. Maybe you can help me shed some light on it. So when Esau saw that the Canaanite women did not please Isaac, his father, Esau went to Ishmael and took as his wife, besides the wives he had, Mahalath, the daughter of Ishmael, Abraham's son, the sister of Nebaioth. What do you think that means, that didn't please Isaac? Because Isaac just told Jacob, go find a Canaanite woman.
Right. And that... Now, back up a minute. Well, I'm probably going back here even unto...
Oh, did I get that twisted?
Right.
Oh, my bad.
Esau had married into that land. Now he's sending Jacob back, and he says, "I want you to go back to the place where where we're from. I've gotten my wife from back there. That's where Abraham came from. That's where I'm going to send you back to find your wife." And here's Esau, and he's like, "I married wives from around here. Are they not good enough for you?" And certainly they had probably brought, again, I'm going to trace it back to their idolatry. Mm-hmm. They're the people of this land, had brought unhappiness and displeasure for them. It's kind of like almost the idea of parents telling him here, "Jacob, if you want to make us real happy, you go get a good wife from over there." And he's like, "Well, what about my wives?"
Yeah, yeah.
So he at least marries into the family by finding a wife of the daughters of Ishmael. So,
yeah, I mean, and that's interesting about Esau is he had multiple wives already.
Mm-hmm.
So he went and did that. Do we see anything about Jacob having wives before he went to get Leah and Rachel?
No, not until this time. So he would go and you know, that's something interesting, too. I always picture them as young men.
Mm-hmm.
Again, do some of your math. You're probably looking at a man that's about 71.
Oh, wow.
71, 77 when he's going there. And no indication, of course, at this point, he's been married because the only wives we're going to read of are Leah and Rachel and
handmaids.
The handmaids. Yeah. So,
who weren't really his wives either.
Yeah.
So we look at Jacob's dream, starting in verse 10 of chapter 28. Jacob left Beersheba and went toward Haran, and he came to a certain place and stayed there the night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones of the place, he put it under his head and lay down on the place to sleep. And he dreamed, and behold, there was a ladder set up on the earth, and the top of it reached to heaven. And behold, the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. Behold, the Lord stood above it and said, "I am the Lord, the God of Abraham, your father, and the God of Isaac. The land in which you lie I will give to you and to your offspring. Your offspring shall be like the dust of the earth, and you shall spread abroad to the west and the east and to the north and the south. And in you and your offspring shall all the families of the earth be blessed." A little messianic prophecy right there. Then Jacob awoke from his sleep and said, "Surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it." And he was afraid and said, "How awesome is this place! This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven." So early in the morning, Jacob took the stone that he had put under his head and set it up for a pillar and poured oil on the top of it. And he called the name of that place Bethel. But the name of the city was Luz, Luz as the first. Then Jacob made a vow, saying, "If God be with me and will keep me in this way that I go, and will give me bread to eat and clothing to wear, so that I come again to my father's house in peace, then the Lord shall be my God. And the stone which I've set up for the pillar shall be God's house. And of all that you give me, I will give a full tenth to you." Mm-hmm. You know, we look at this passage of Scripture, it looks like Jacob is trying to make a deal with God. If you do all of this, I'm going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
But if you take the full context, what I'm saying is God has already made the promise.
Right.
And Jacob's just saying, if you're doing all this, you're my God.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not him making a deal saying, if you do this, then I'm coming to the agreement. Because mm-hmm. that's not how God operates.
Right.
It is a conditional covenant because God's going to do his part, but we don't make deals with God.
Mm-hmm.
So we see Jacob seeing that vision and saying, okay, I'm in. All right. This was his aha moment,
right.
I think. This
right.
was his, okay, I'm gonna do what I'm supposed to do.
And, you know, again, it's going to be by the hand of God. There's maybe some trickery that he's going to be dealing in terms of the flocks that will come up with Laban later. But in many ways, he's about to be humbled, I think. He goes into the house of Laban. Laban's going to mistreat him. He's going to mm-hmm. do to Jacob what Jacob's been doing to Esau.
Mm-hmm.
And but yet
people don't like it when they get a taste of their own medicine.
But here's Jacob. You've got to think of what a comfort that is, that he's fleeing. He's got nothing. He's left everything behind, basically. And yet he comes to this point, and God says, "I'm still with you. And not only are you going away, but I'm going to bring you back to this place."
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be in God's time, maybe not as fast as he's thinking it's going to happen, but I'll bring you back to this place, and I'm going to bless you. And so a man that's going to go out empty, but God promises you're going to return here and you'll be full. And so what an encouragement that has to be to him that would drive him to then say, I'm going to serve you. I'm going to follow you.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think you see a change in his life from this point forward in terms of how he deals with people, how he's later going to deal with Esau. He doesn't come back and say, well, you deserve this. He comes back with great apology.
I wonder, do you think we could see a parallel of this with Paul's conversion?
Mm-hmm.
Of he didn't do right before, even though Paul did awful.
Mm-hmm.
Jacob was deceitful, but Paul was killing people.
Right.
And it took them, quote-unquote, seeing the light.
Mm-hmm.
And we see a distinct turnaround in behavior.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool. So we'll go ahead and move on to chapter 29, Jacob marrying Leah and Rachel. As Ryan just said, he's going to get a taste of his own medicine. Still nobody in the chat box.
No, man, join us today. So.
We're really doing, but we're man, we're on fire though. So, Jacob went on his journey and came to the land of the people of the east. As he looked, he saw a well in the field, and behold, three flocks of sheep lying beside it. For out of that well, the flocks were watered. The stone on the well's mouth was large, and when all the flocks were gathered together, the shepherds would roll the stone from the mouth of the well in the water and water the sheep and put the stone back in its place over the mouth of the well. Jacob said to them, "My brothers, where do you come from?" And they said, "We are from Haran." And he said to them, "Do you know Laban, the son of Nahor?" And they said, "We know him." And he said to them, "Is it well with him?" And they said, "It is well. And see, Rachel, his daughter, is coming with the sheep." So he's like, "Hey, is he still around here?" Mm-hmm. "Yeah, well, his daughter's coming. You can talk to her." He said, "Behold, it is still high day. It's not time for livestock to be gathered together. Water the sheep and go and pasture them." But they said, "We cannot until all the flocks are gathered together and the stone is rolled from the mouth of the well. Then we water the sheep." So we do things our way. I mean, is that what you're getting from this?
Right. And I almost wonder there in verse 7 if he's not saying, "Hey, why don't y'all go ahead and water your sheep and get on out of here?
Oh.
Go about your business and leave us alone." But yeah, that's the idea. Some have suggested, you know, this kind of community well, and they would all gather together at the same time to water their sheep, and yet he's going to break their custom.
Yeah, we can see, I mean, people do things a certain way. And sometimes if we do something a certain way, we want to go somewhere and have people do things our way.
Mm-hmm.
And that can end up being a problem. I remember in preaching school, one of my teachers was Gerald Ball. And he was preaching, I forget where he was, it was up north somewhere. And some people came up, and as they were leaving, they told him, "You're a false teacher." And he's like, "What do you mean I'm a false teacher? I mean, what did I say? They said, "Well, you had two songs and a prayer instead of one song and a prayer."
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, what? That's ridiculous. I mean, but it doesn't have really anything to do with that, but I always got a kick out of that mm-hmm. story. But here we see I like what you're thinking. Get on out of here. But in verse 9, while he was still speaking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep. For she was a shepherdess. Now, as soon as Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, Jacob came near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. Then Jacob kissed Rachel and wept aloud. And Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's kinsman and that he was Rebekah's son. And she ran and told her father. So, I mean, he was pretty pumped.
Anything, you know, here's the basically the answer to his prayers. This is what I've been looking for. But the excitement on both sides. I mean, Rebekah, his mother, has come from this family. And when she left, probably there's not been any communication back to the family. How has she been? What happened to her? How have things fared for her? And so to hear back, here's her son. He's come, and he can tell us all about how things have fared for them. And surely a great reunion.
Oh, yeah, and Laban hears about it, and he's excited. Verse 14, he says, "Surely you are my bone and my flesh." And he stayed with him a month. Verse 15, then Laban said to Jacob, "Because you're my kinsman, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me, what shall your wages be?" Now Laban had two daughters. The name of the older was Leah. The name of the younger was Rachel. Leah's eyes were weak, but Rachel was beautiful in form and appearance. So that weak or soft eyes, some have said that it was poor vision. And I mean, others have, I don't know.
I've never researched the words there, what they meant. I always thought about the idea of a, I think we would use the word homely. Nothing all that special to look at, but certainly in contrast to her sister.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And verse 18, Jacob loved Rachel, and he said, I will serve you 7 years for your younger daughter, Rachel. Laban says, it's better that I give her to you than that I should give her to any other man. Stay with me. So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed to him but a few days because of the love he had for her. Then Jacob said to Laban, give me the wife that I may go into her for my time is completed. So Laban gathered together all the people of the place and made a feast. But in the evening he took his daughter Leah and brought her to Jacob, and he went into her. Laban gave his female servant Zilpah to his daughter Leah to be her servant. And in the morning, behold, it was Leah. And Jacob said to Laban, what is this you've done to me? Did I not serve you for Rachel? Why then have you deceived me? Laban said, it is not done so in our country to give the younger before the firstborn. Complete the week of this one, and he will give you the other also in return for serving me another 7 years. I wonder if that was really the custom of the time, because we've all seen TV shows. There's a show that my daughter watches called Some Assembly Required.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Netflix show. Mm-hmm. It's about a young man that runs a toy company. And the woman that lost the company dresses up and has made up this made-up country. And she dresses up like an old lady and makes up all this stuff about what it's like in her home country. And I wonder if if it's something similar to hers. Like, well, this is how we do things here.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's really that way or not. I mean, history doesn't really indicate either way.
Maybe just an excuse that sounded good.
Yeah, to get to marry off Leah.
But either way, even if that was, he still done it deceptively.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like you said, as we would say, he's gotten a taste of his own medicine.
Yep, and sometimes that can end up going two ways. And we see in the world, if somebody does something wrong and then somebody does it back to them, they can either, it'll either humble them and realize I have done the wrong thing, or they just grow more irate than they normally would.
Mm-hmm.
I had a friend in college that in my time of being friends with him, which was about 4 or 5 years, I don't think he ever apologized for anything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he did some rotten stuff, but he expected you to just be okay with it. And if you told him, hey, that wasn't nice for you to do, he'd get mad about it and try to throw stuff back in your face. But if you did something to him, he would say, oh, mister, I'm never sorry. And it was one of those, everybody around him, we had a pretty good circle of friends. If we did something wrong, we'd apologize about it. And he's the one that never did. So he's the one with a rotten attitude. So it was kind of crazy. But we see that Jacob ends up turning in the right direction, so to speak.
Right. You know, and that's one thing that impresses me, I guess, in the course of that is, I don't know what all his actions were. He's a foreign man in a foreign country. I guess he could flee. He's probably not likely to challenge Laban. But instead, he humbly, you know, seems to take it. And he said, okay, I've worked the 7 years. I've got Leah. I'll take Rachel as well, and I'll work the other 7 years. And he does it. And we don't see really that grumbling or that complaining. He goes and he sets about and he works.
Yeah, you know, we look at verse 31. When the Lord saw that Leah was hated, he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. That hated is not the best terminology. Mm. The Hebrew word that's used there is loved less. And Leah was loved less. She wasn't hated. He opened her womb. Rachel was barren. Leah conceived and bore a son. She called his name Reuben, the father of fantastic sandwiches.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's really the case, but Reuben sandwiches are delicious. For she said, behold, the Lord has looked upon my affliction, for my husband will love me. She conceived again and bore a son and said, because the Lord has heard that I am hated, again loved less, mm-hmm. he has given me this son also. And she calls his name Simeon. Again, she conceived and bore a son. Now, this time my husband will be attached to me because I have borne him 3 sons. Therefore, his name shall be called Levi. And she conceived again and bore a son, and this time I will praise the Lord. Therefore she called his name Judah. Then she ceased bearing. How cool is that? As you see Reuben, you see Simeon, and then as it goes on, it seems like her mindset changes of, even if he is not loving me, I'm going to love mm-hmm. God. And do you see that, or am I reading into it?
I think so. And, you know, here she has that idea, the Lord is going to bless me, the Lord is with me. He's seeing this affliction. I'll point out, like you, I mean, it's worded here, he hated her. I don't want to be crass, but they're having children together.
Yeah.
So he hasn't just set her out in the field and left her.
Right.
But she can tell, I'm not the favorite.
Yeah, he hasn't done like Abraham did to Ishmael's mama.
Yes, yes.
He hadn't just sent her off. Hagar, there you go. He hasn't just sent him off.
Right.
I mean, so it's... She is diligently staying with him and bearing him children. But the first three sons, and I might be reading into this, the first three sons are my husband, my husband, my husband. And the last one, this time, mm-hmm. I will praise the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think it's something that she realizes she may never be the favorite. And maybe her thoughts aren't in the right place, that her life is being blessed, even if she is not the favorite. She is, I mean, God is still blessing her. So that's pretty neat. That will play into my sermon in August. So I think that'll be pretty neat. So we continue on. What time? How much time do we have left? I know we're going to run into people
about,
on Monday.
7 minutes. So
okay, and we can continue looking at the children, I guess. When Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, she envied her sister. She said to Jacob, give me children or I shall die. So it's interesting. The one that was beautiful, the one that was chaste after, not mm-hmm. chaste,
right.
Like chased, the one that was chaste and has all these blessings, has the love that Leah didn't have, also wants it too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like it wasn't enough for her. Jacob's anger was kindled against Rachel and said, am I in the place of God? Who's withheld you from the fruit of the womb? Then she said, here is my servant Bilhah. Go into her so that she may give birth on my behalf. You'd think that history would indicate this doesn't work. But they again. And Jacob went into her, and Bilhah conceived and bore Jacob a son. Then Rachel said, God has judged me, and he has also heard my voice and given me a son. Therefore she shall call his name Dan. Rachel's servant Bilhah conceived again, and he bore a second son. Rachel said, with mighty wrestlings I have wrestled with my sister and have prevailed. So she called his name Naphtali. How did she wrestle with her sister?
I guess just in the sense that she felt, you don't see this competition, I guess.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Leah had felt that growing up, that here's the favored one, and now Rachel, well, she's more favored because she's having the children.
I don't know, because it seems like Leah won. Leah actually had the kids.
Mm-hmm.
Rachel sent somebody else in. When Leah saw that she had ceased bearing children, she took her servant Zilpah and gave her to Jacob as a wife. Then Leah's servant Zilpah bore a son, and Leah said, good fortune has come, and she called his name Gad. Leah's servant Zilpah bore Jacob a second son, and Leah said, happy am I, for women have called me happy. So she called his name Asher. In the days of wheat harvest, Reuben went and found mandrakes in the field. So Rachel even wanted the mandrakes. I know we're running out of time.
Mm-hmm.
Rachel wanted the mandrakes, basically begging Leah to let me have my husband just for tonight. So Leah said, God has given me wages because I gave my servant my husband. So she called his name Issachar. And Leah conceived again. Remember, she thought she was done. She bore Jacob a sixth son. Leah said, God has endowed me with a good endowment. Now my husband will honor me because I've borne him six sons. So she called his name Zebulun. Doing some ancestry work, I actually have like a great-great-great-great-granddaddy Zebulun.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty interesting. Afterwards, she bore a daughter and named her and called her name Dinah. Then God remembered Rachel, and God listened to her and opened her womb. She conceived and bore a son, and God has taken away my reproach. She called his name Joseph, saying, may the Lord add to me another son. So that'll get us into Richard's show on Monday. But looking at the life of Jacob, isn't it crazy? We've been able to go through an entire life, practically, with two sons being born. Now we see 12 children.
Right.
Or 13 children.
And that's what I love here about this. For Jacob, it was an exodus. He's running in fear for his life, and yet God is going to bless him here.
Mm-hmm.
He goes away. He's going to come back with two wives, two concubines, a house full of children, large amount of possessions as he works here for Laban. You know, 14 years for his wives. Then they make arrangements that he's going to carry for the flock here. And his herds are going to grow all during that time so that he comes back a rich man.
Mm-hmm.
And indeed, God has blessed him through all of this time.
Yeah. So, well, we hope you enjoyed the show today. We'll tune in on Monday for Richard to continue on with his study of Jacob and Esau. So glad that Ryan was able to come into the studio because it's always good to have a tag team partner in this. Chris should be back next week. Hopefully he's having a good time with his classes in Alabama, and we'll have a safe trip home.
Thank
you so much for tuning in. For Ryan Smithy, this is J.J. Hendricks. Have a great day, and remember, we're proud of you.
You've been listening to Mornings for the Master on the Gospel Radio Network. Remember to join us each weekday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Central Standard Time or catch the replay at 9 p.m. Central Time. You can also contact us at mornings@tgrn.org if you have any questions we can help you with, or if you have events you would like to submit to our bulletin board, or just with general feedback about the program or network. We would love to hear from you. As we've had opportunity to spend time with the Master this morning in His Word, let's remember His words in Luke 6:46, when He said, "Why call ye me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say?" He goes on to say in verse 47 and 48, "Whosoever cometh to me and heareth my sayings and doeth them, I will show to you whom he is like. He is like a man which built an house and digged deep and laid the foundation on a rock. And when the flood arose, the stream beat vehemently upon that house and could not shake it, for it was founded upon a rock." Let's show the wisdom of that builder and go now to live for the Master.